It's 8 o'clock. This is KVNF Regional News for Wednesday, March 9th. I'm Patricia Naft. A recent federal report looks at changes in how the United States generates its electricity. It shows a significant drop in the amount of power coming from coal. KVNF's Jake Ryan has more.
The analysis looked at retired power generation, that is, types of electrical production that aren't being used anymore. Over 80% of the retired electricity was coal-powered. Those plants either closed or switched to natural gas generation. Brian Wilson is the director of the Colorado State University Energy Institute. He says that the shifts are happening because cheap natural gas and emission standards enacted last year.
The combustion of coal produces a fair amount of mercury, also produces ash, particulates, sulfur, and there are solutions to all of those. We have coal-fired plants that can burn very cleanly. However, the owners could bring much more efficient natural gas plants online relatively cost-effectively.
While coal was a majority of retired power generation, the majority of new installation came from renewable energy. This creates another problem for coal, and not just from a price point. When the sun sets or the wind dies down, renewable generation drops, and to cover the shortfall, other power plants have to step up.
Natural gas plants can do that load following fairly well. Coal plants are much more challenged in that. They don't respond as quickly, and they incur fatigue in the boilers when they suddenly change loads.
So as renewable energy becomes more integrated into the grid, natural gas looks even more attractive. Also, with massive proven reserves of natural gas, the price will probably remain low for a very long time.
We are seeing a change in the way the U.S. grid is structured. You're seeing a change in the way global grids are structured. You're seeing increased environmental pressures. All of those things combined make things look challenging for the coal industry moving ahead.
He says that coal will definitely have a role to play in our national grid and of other nations, but how big that role will be is uncertain. For KVNF, I'm Jake Ryan.
Democrats in the House defeated a slew of pro-gun bills on Monday after more than 8 hours of testimony. The measures would have repealed Colorado's high-capacity magazine ban, allowed people to use deadly force against an intruder at a business, and eliminated permits for carrying a concealed handgun. Republican Representative Patrick Neville of Castle Rock sponsored a bill to allow concealed carry at public schools.
I, for one, am tired of sending my daughters to school on blind faith that they will return home from a place where people are prevented by state law from equipping themselves to protect my daughters.
Democrats on the House State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee say Colorado's gun laws are effective and appropriate and have no intention of scaling them back. Democrats passed stricter gun laws in 2013 when they controlled both legislative chambers. A bill to examine how much it would cost to build a reservoir to store water on the South Platte River between Greeley and Julesburg cleared its first House committee unanimously. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
Colorado is losing water that it has the right to keep. So say water planners in the state. They'd like to capture some of that water before it leaves the state. Right now, it flows along the South Platte River eastward into neighboring Nebraska. Republican Representative J. Paul Brown of Ignacio has a bill to study the cost of building a reservoir on the plains between Greeley and Julesburg.
It's just one little step in the direction of what we need to do, and that is to manage our water properly. We will need less western slope water. We won't dry up our farmland.
The cost just to study it is $250,000. The study would be finished by the end of next year. James Eklund with the Colorado Water Conservation Board says the project is needed to meet the demands of the state's growing population.
The South Platte happens to be the Gordian knot, if you will, of water in Colorado because we have the population here and the water scarcity is so highlighted here.
The bill now heads to the House Appropriations Committee. It's expected to clear both chambers. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
A Montrose nonprofit will soon close its doors. Community Heart and Hands recently announced the news. The organization had three main programs: Medicare counseling, a volunteer handyman service for low-income residents, and an after-school learning program for middle schoolers. Last year, Region 10 took over the Medicare counseling. The after-school program was canceled due to a lack of community support, and Habitat for Humanity of the San Juans is taking over the handyman project. Community Heart and Hands Executive Director Susan Boney says she's sad to see the organization go.
But on the other hand, I think that it's a good thing that it's going. I really firmly believe that we don't need a nonprofit existing for one little program. Handyman program, I believe, will be well supported under Habitat. And I think that the Medicare counseling, I know that's doing very well under Region 10 Area Agency on Aging. I think it makes sense for the community and it makes sense for the programs given the scenario of what happened.
Boney says Community Heart and Hands will donate its remaining assets to other area nonprofits. Rock Slides closed I-70 through Glenwood Canyon for nearly a week last month. The road is now partially open as crews continue repairs. For an update on how things are going, KVNF's Laura Pomisano spoke to Tracy Truelove with the Colorado Department of Transportation.
Currently, what we're having to do is we're finishing up rockfall netting on the slope. And while that's concurrently, what's happening is we have the highway surfaces being repaired.
What are some challenges crews are facing?
Well, some of the challenges in this particular instance is you still have people on the slope above the highway working, and you could have loose material or rock come down. So obviously safety being one of the number one issues we have here is that we're having to really coordinate the two activities, so the rock scaling activity and then the construction activity on the repairs to the highway. Our geohazards team monitors about 750 active rockfall sites across the state. So, you know, unfortunately, living in a place like the Rocky Mountains, one of the challenges we have is you can't predict this kind of activity. You can only do your best to mitigate it to a point that it's safe to keep the highway open.
The highway isn't completely open all the time. For example, Tuesday it was closed from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. while crews were doing repairs. How are these intermittent closures affecting traffic?
Well, the Tuesday closure was necessary because we have a helicopter flying in the rockfall netting and material, and you really cannot have traffic running under a helicopter operation. So the Tuesday closure adds, you know, additional challenges because you have people that have stopped in Glenwood or stopped on the other side of the highway and are trying to queue up to get in line to be the first people through. So we see more of the challenge being in the local community, just really kind of jamming up traffic.
When will the highway be fully open?
I guess you're asking is, you know, completely repaired. And this project right now, the construction piece of the project is looking at a late April completion.
So individuals could still see intermittent closures on the highway throughout this month and into next month?
They could, but I can tell you one of the things that did help the situation is when we were able to move into a two-way traffic or head-to-head configuration where we had traffic running on the eastbound lanes, the flow really improved because traffic was moving continuously, not as many stops. Now, occasionally we will have to do intermittent stops that slows down and delays people a little bit, but it hasn't been as impactful as the early stages of the incident.
That was CDOT spokeswoman Tracy Truelove speaking to KVNF's Laura Pomisano. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.